Can I just come back on you on that one, Scott?
Of course, yeah, by all means, Dave.
It was consumer duty that made me think about this, and particularly vulnerability. And I think the FCA and most advisors probably, excuse me, come at the vulnerability from vulnerability at the time of giving the advice. But of course, if in the case of death or critical illness, somebody who was previously, I'll use a dreadful word, invulnerable, has suddenly become more vulnerable than they've possibly ever been in their life before. It's a time of bereavement, and you know, I'll use emotive language. The widow is not thinking straight. Her husband handled all the money, and he assured her that he'd got life cover that would pay the mortgage off. And she happens to be, and let's say, for example, she's not on the mortgage. I have a very specific email that I send out from my CRM system whenever I do a mortgage, and it asks 8 questions. I won't go through them all for brevity. But one of them is, will you waive or charge the ERC in the case of the death of a spouse or partner of the borrower if they're not on the mortgage? And invariably they come back and say, we will charge the ERC. So you could have the situation where the long-term partner or the spouse has died. They contribute to the, they just happen to be, maybe for credit reasons, they're not on the mortgage, or for some other reason, they're not on the mortgage. They die, if they had life insurance, and if it's a 5% charge at Santander, for example, sizable mortgage, there could be a substantial shortfall. If the advisor did, and here's the problem, if the advisor didn't point that out in a suitability report and say, well, you know, there is a circumstance where there could be a significant shortfall up to, depending on the mortgage, for example, 20,000 quid. Do you want to protect this? In which case the premium will be this, and over the term the policy will be that. Or do you want to, hope that the lender won't charge it and will use discretion? I can't guarantee which they will do. The price of this and the price of that is this and this, to put the customer in the fully informed situation. So unless you point that out to the client, I suspect FOS would actually say, hang on a minute, you didn't explain to the customer that there could be a £20,000 shortfall because you didn't check the point of the lender. So we're going to find against you.
I can't speak to what FOS would say. My experience has been that lenders tend to be very reasonable in these situations. We can always, the problem is, and I suppose it's a mindset of any advisor, is we start to end up looking at all the potential issues that could crop up and catastrophizing a lot of them in our own minds. And that can then lead us down to rabbit. And this is where you obviously end up with, you know, SRs being 67 pages long because everyone's trying to cover every possible scenario. And then we end up in a whole different situation of, well, now we've got a 67 page SR that no one actually reads. The first person who's going to read it is going to be, you know, a lawyer or FOS. Yeah. So we end up in a situation where you say, you know, do you try and cover the things that are most likely to happen, or do you try and cover every eventuality?
Well,
and I think it's a conversation whole of financial services needs to have with itself and try and come to a conclusion on that one. Because, yeah, you know, like you say, you can have all sorts of different scenarios and none of them are going to be covered in the general day to day. But how far down each one do you go to end up in what someone might call the right place? You know, all of a sudden we've got 6-hour meetings, 67 page SRs to cover every possibility. There's got to be a line drawn somewhere where you say, where does reasonable end, and we're starting to get into very nuanced individual circumstances.
That's a fair point. However, for me, this comes under avoiding foreseeable harm. And death.
But a lot can come under that. That's the problem. A lot can come under foreseeable harm.
That's the game we're in, isn't it? If you don't have the heat in that kitchen, it comes under that. But we're in the kitchen, and death is foreseeable. You know, we're all going to pop our clothes. It's just, you know, when. It's avoiding foreseeable harm. And the foreseeable harm is the 5% possibly being charged. And we're talking about potentially an extremely large amount of money. So my point is simply, we need to ask the questions of lenders. Will they reserve the right to make the charge in certain scenarios, present that information to the customer in a concise way and say, you can choose to not cover it and just cover the mortgage, or you can choose to cover it and the cost would be this. In my suitability reports, it takes up just one extra paragraph and you know, to give the client the opportunity to be covered for that amount of money. And you could say there'll always be an ERC because people do a product transfer or a remap. So that for the life of the mortgage, there'll always be an ongoing ERC. So
but at what,
fully
at what percentage?
Avoiding foreseeable harm.
Because it's 5% in the first year of a 5-year fixed rate, but then likely 4 years in this, in 4-3-2-1, you know. So it's at what rate do you do it?
5%.
The other argument is, you know, at any one point is then somebody overinsured. You get into all sorts of
ideally, the FCA should ban the practice, of course.
Just sorry to interrupt. I'd just like to bring in our very own Mr. Ian McKenna into this conversation. I can see you've also got your hand up, so I think we were both thinking.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting issue. As I've observed in the chat, you know, is it something that mortgage sourcing systems should be picking up, and is the default to cover it? You've got to consider the person when they are at maximum risk. The reality is that somebody probably later, you know, very few, well, how many people buy a mortgage that is their last mortgage? There's probably an expectation, you know, certainly for younger customers at least, that there'll be a subsequent mortgage at a later date. I think it's a really interesting one, although I do think it's probably something that mortgage sourcing systems should pick up, and you know, then you can have a clear commitment or otherwise. And actually, if you're looking at two mortgage products that are absolutely identical in every respect, except one's stating that they'll waive the early redemption fee and the other one in the event of death and the other one won't, well, that just decided who got the business. It is a valuable question, and again, this whole issue of avoidable harm, you know, it so opens a can of worms. Sorry, just as I say, my view is, look to the sourcing systems. Then it begs the question, and it does beg the question, you know, yeah, should you be adding that redemption fee as part of the sum assured initially? Better overinsured than underinsured? Does one need an extra paragraph in the suitability letter to say we've added it? And yeah, that will mean you're overinsured for a period of time. But.
Thank you, Ian. I'm just conscious of the time. I appreciate we've had some really good comments in the chat, and if we get the opportunity, I'd definitely like to visit some of those. I want to hand over now to David Thomas, Senior Propositions Manager of MetLife. David, you're kindly going to share with us what you feel has gone well in 2024, and then also your wish list for 2025, because I'm conscious that you need to dash off to another meeting straight from this one. So if we could hear about your what went well to start with, that would be brilliant. So over to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah, interesting. Thank you for the... being my warm-up act, Scott and Michael. It's greatly appreciated hearing your thoughts, because they do kind of segue into mine quite nicely. So what's my observations personally from 2024 through attending forums and industry groups during the last few years, ILAG, ABI, IPTF, and Protection Guru, of course. I think my observation in coming into 2024, and here we are near the end of it, that as an industry, I think we've risen to the challenge of understanding consumer duty and implementing consumer duty quite well, perhaps better than expected. So I'm optimistic for the future. It no longer feels like the customer is my customer, and then it becomes your customer, and then once you claim it, then becomes my customer again. So the customer is no longer owned by one party before being passed to the next. We collectively have the same responsibility and onus to nurture and look after the customer from end to end. So I think that's a really good thing. Some of that, I can see signs that the industry has started to accept, attending the cover forum, things like that, that we're not just rehashing the same presentations of previous 5 years cover forums, just with new slides. We're starting to accept that talking about the protection gap endlessly isn't going to address the protection gap. It's not everyone else's problem to solve. Let's not fall foul of doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. So how do we go about doing that? Well, this year we've seen products launched and improved and enhanced that recognize that, I guess, there's more to protection than death. There's more to life than life. That the everyday risks that people face are just as valid in their cover needs and the important part of that protection puzzle. And we need to go about providing cover for those cover options in a new way. Michael mentioned a minute ago things like standalone child cover and being able to add fracture cover and tendons and ligaments and things like that, which are really important, because if the customer is, well, I don't have a mortgage, therefore I don't need it. I don't have a family, therefore I don't need it. Well, you do. You just need it, different things in a different way. And as Scott mentioned earlier, industry reports are especially valuable if they tell us something new and surprising. Something that I was involved with, happy to champion, is MetLife's Everyday Risk Report that we launched earlier this year, shows that 10% of hospital visits are due to accidents, and 76% of those required further treatment. So the financial effect of simply a broken bone and a couple of nights in hospital can be hugely significant. And when compiling the reports, advisors told us that a third of their customers are conscious about protecting their everyday lives or are actively seeking out some protection for it. But a 30% of the advisors we surveyed said that most customers have very little understanding of the kinds of protection products that are available. So they recognize a need, but don't know what they can do about it, or they do not understand the difference in the financial protection on offer. You know, if protection is protection, well, no, it's not. There's a whole range if you only knew about it. So I guess looking ahead to next year, we do need to recognise that there is a broad range of insurance needs that are important to our customers, that's your customers, our customers, everybody's customer. And to look beyond the death, kick and long-term incapacity to include everyday real risks too. And yes, we must continue to innovate and launch and test and ruffle a few feathers and disrupt, but also to simplify. So let's make it much more understandable as to what protection is on offer. That's it. Thank you.
No, that's brilliant. Thank you. Stephen Pickering, I've just seen a comment from yourself. Would you mind stepping up and just sharing a bit around what you've just mentioned there? Hello, there you are.
Hello, sorry. The light's obviously not very good in here.
See the blinds.
So you can see me. Might see me a bit better. Sorry, I was just responding to someone else's point about who's kind of, I was going to add another one, but as I'm speaking, about whose responsibility is it? Someone had said, should the insurers not sort of, you know, add an additional feature in that says that on top of the claim, they would also pay the early repayment charge. And the point I've just put in there is, well, why should it be the insurer's responsibility to do that when the banks could quite easily waive that? Because really, all the early repayment charge is designed to stop a mortgage customer jumping ship to a better deal early. It's not really, you know, going to be designed to cover that scenario where someone is paying off some or all of their mortgage in the, because their partner's died or they've become critically ill. Which is why I think, you know, Scott said earlier, in most scenarios where it's asked, I know Tracy's had a bad experience from Barclays, but it's generally would be waived. And I think because it's just not worth the bad press, and perhaps sometimes, I guess, maybe it's, you know, knowing who to kind of ask and stuff, and throwing your weight around a little bit, maybe, I don't know. But I kind of think it seems more fair to, in terms of preventing vulnerable harm in that particular scenario, that the bank should waive that. The other thing, I kind of understand to some extent that the banks may not want to do that and think, well, why doesn't the insurer take that on? But the other thing to think of is, depending on the size of the mortgage, whoever's going to either waive that or cover that additional cost, that could be huge. You know, if you've got a, you know, substantial mortgage in, you know, somewhere in, you know, some massive house in London, and that the early repayment charge could be tens of thousands, if not more, and that's an awful lot, you know. So from an expectation of getting the insurer to just agree to cover that, you know, that could, that additional benefit could take a whole level of additional underwriting and take you into, you know, needing a medical or GP report. So I think it does seem much more viable that the insurers in that the banks in that scenario should agree to kind of waive it. That was my two cents on that matter.
Thank you for your view, Stephen. And I think Jason Borg's just made an interesting comment around, you know, perhaps it should be something that you will start campaigning. So I'm going to let you guys decide whether that's something you want to do or not. I'm conscious it's 2:45 and we've got a packed second half in terms of agenda with guest speakers to talk around what our wish lists are for 2025. So I'm going to suggest if we can all be back for 1:55, we'll just have our 10 minute break now. Where Ian will introduce the second half, and we'll hear all about your wish list for 2025.